Well, welcome. So I didn't bring the posture poster tonight. So does anybody have any last questions, literally about sitting? Because it can be, you know, a big part of it. It can be uncomfortable. So does anybody have anything they want to ask about that before we get started? Last opportunity. Everybody good? Okay. So I think we'll just start off with the meditation, and then we'll do our dumping for the week. Let's see how everybody's doing. So just go ahead and get comfortable. If you want to come down to the cushions to meditate, you can do that and move back later. So Zach, you're new, you're just going to roll with it. So the important thing is to keep your spine nice and straight and have your body settled down, chin slightly lowered, eyes open gently, looking down or closed. Breathe nice and natural. Focus your attention on your breath and use one of the various breathing meditations, just counting the breaths, 9-round breathing, going backwards and forwards by counting the breaths. Or you can say, I'm breathing in, I'm breathing out, whatever works for you. Settling your mind into the moment, into a more concentrated state. When your mind is calm and clear, create an altruistic motivation for this meditation session and think that you're meditating not just for your own individual benefit, but you're taking the time now to meditate, develop your mind, become wiser and kinder, more able to benefit all beings. Since you intended to come here tonight, whether 5 weeks ago or 6 weeks ago when you prepared your mind for it, you've been creating positive energy towards this evening, this whole time. So just take all that energy that you've created and put it towards the benefit of all beings. And now visualize in the space above your head a sphere of white light, pure, transparent, and formless, somewhat similar to the size of your head, and spend several minutes concentrating simply on the presence of the light. Don't worry if it doesn't appear sharply. It's just enough to feel that it's there. Contemplate that the sphere of light represents all universal goodness, love, and wisdom, the very fulfillment of your own highest potential. Then visualize that it decreases in size until it is a small, bright sphere, just about 1 inch big. This small ball of pure white light descends through the top of your head to your heart center. And from there, it begins to expand more and more, slowly spreading to fill your entire body. As it does, all the solid parts of your body dissolve and become light. Your organs and bones, blood vessels, tissue and skin, all become pure, formless white light. Concentrate on the experience of your body as a body of light. Think that all problems, negativities, hindrances have become completely vanished, and that you have reached a state of wholeness and perfection. Feel serene and joyful. And if any distracting object or thought appears in your mind, simply let it dissolve into the white light. And meditate in this way for the next few moments. Now dedicate all this positive energy and insights to the well-being and happiness of all living beings. You can bring your attention back. I hope nobody had a soggy ball of light over there. So this is always a good example of karma. You have dry karma, and those others have wet karma. I love it when we come here to the center sometimes, like if you came in, there's no rain when you walked in, right? And then it rains and rains and rains, and some people are just poured on, and then it stops, and when you leave, it's all dry for you again. You're like, rain? That's how life is, isn't it? All right, class number 5. Nostalgic. Let's see, where are we going tonight? Okay. Oh, let's do our week dump out. So who's got anything? I know you guys are so chatty. Who's got anything to talk about? Any experiences with the meditations or questions about your setting up an altar? Who wants to tell me what the homework was? Because we forgot it right when we walked away, but now I remember. Can you give her the microphone? Thank you. No, you can just tell what it was. Yeah. We'll let somebody else do confessions. Okay, what was the homework?
Okay, homework was watching ourselves, how and whether we judge people.
Yeah, how we judged. And we were talking about the bullet or butter or bird. So when Venerable Rene had that experiment done to him and the bullet went by, he just said, oh, it could have been a bird. It's a lovely sound, you know, bullet, bird. So your idea was all week long to kind of look at when you were saying bullet, you know, bird. And you want to go in that direction and you don't want to go in that direction. And you find aversion and attachment. And then just how it played out. So who's got a scenario for me? You should see her face. Oh, good. It always takes a while to warm you guys up. I should have a plant. I had a plant. Sometimes I have a plant.
I did attempt the not judging thing, but I kind of tried to focus, I guess, on the emptiness of things. I'd been doing that for a while.
Well, all right, jump.
I'm sorry.
No, it's cool.
And it's really, really interesting. Sometimes it's difficult to tell your mind things are just what they are. Don't add anything in. And the easiest thing, and the first thing that I actually did was kind of use it mainly for people who agitate me a bit. So,
very good place to start. They're your precious jewels. Did it work?
I remembered that, and I remembered the unruly beings.
Unruly beings.
So,
did you put shoes on, or did you put leather down?
I put shoes on.
Good.
Shoes. So, basically, that's kind of been my practice, I guess, for a few weeks now, just kind of focusing on the emptiness of things. And I actually have my own practice where I'll assign it something good, like mainly make it peaceful or something like that. Even if someone's, you know, arguing or I'm in a certain situation, I'll always try to add in peace instead of my own anger, mm-hmm. or, you know, contempt or something like that. So
instead of piling it on.
Exactly.
Right.
And kind of tried to not bring a story everywhere I go. So that's mainly been my practice for maybe the last few weeks.
Awesome.
It's been working.
Yay. I wish I'd paid him to do that. I would. That's great. That's great. So the unruly beings, you guys remember we just said the Shanti Davis story, unruly beings are as vast as, you know, like we pictured it like gravel everywhere. And so we can either put leather down so we can just get them to quiet down so that it's better for us, or we can put on a pair of shoes. Toss up. Who else has a good week story or bad week story? I mean, that's what we're working on. No stories. I could pick on Kimmy, but she didn't have the homework from last week. Okay, we'll just jump in then. Okay, so there's this story. I'm going to read you a story to start off. That should be pretty tame. Some of you probably heard it before, but it's so impacting that I try to read it every time. It's not part of the requirements either. It's called The Cookie Thief. Have you guys heard that before? A woman was waiting in an airport one night with several long hours before her flight. She hunted for a book in the airport shops, bought a bag of cookies, and found a place to drop. She was engrossed in her book, but happened to see that the man sitting beside her, as bold as could be, grabbed a cookie or two from the bag in between, and she tried to... I just realized it rhymed like last year. I've been saying this for 6 years, I think. She was engrossed in the book, but had happened to see that the man sitting beside her, as bold as could be, grabbed a cookie or two from the bag in between, when she tried to ignore to avoid a scene. Much more playful. So she munched the cookies and watched the clock as the gutsy cookie thief diminished her stock. She was getting more irritated as the minutes ticked by, thinking, if I wasn't so nice, I would blacken his eye. With each cookie she took, he took one too. When only one was left, she wondered what would he do. With a smile on his face and a nervous laugh, he took the last cookie and broke it in half. He offered her half, and as he ate the other, she snatched it from him and thought, oh, brother. This guy has some nerve and he's also rude. Why, he didn't even show any gratitude. She had never known when she had been so galled and sighed with relief when her flight was called. She gathered her belongings and headed to the gate, refusing to look back at the thieving ingrate. I like that one. She boarded the plane and sank in her seat. Then she sought her book, which was almost complete. As she reached in her baggage, she gasped with surprise. There was her bag of cookies in front of her eyes. If mine are here, she moaned in despair, the others were his, and he tried to share. Doesn't it give you goosebumps? Too late to apologize, she realized with grief that she was the rude one, the ingrate, the thief. Awesome, huh? It's interesting. So, working with the mind, a little tricky. Good stuff. So we're going to talk about analytical meditation again and then kind of come back around to some other ideas. So we talked about why analytical meditation is so important and picking a topic. Has anybody tried that yet? You can just raise your hand. You don't have to speak. Okay? Yeah, in the back? You guys tried it? Okay. A little bit. He's going. Picking a topic for analytical meditation at home. So that you would have something, if you were really jumping in, you could do the Lam Rim, you know, or you can pick a poem, or you can pick, you can read a book and sort of read a little bit maybe in the morning at breakfast, and then when you do your meditation, you can meditate on it as a topic. So have you guys found that it's kind of easier to keep your focus when you have a topic? Yeah. Yeah. And we talked about the difference between just kind of daydreaming and sitting there and chilling out, and why that's not actually meditation. It is chilling out, and it feels good. But meditation is going in and doing some work. So review, Geshe-la talked about this weekend, analytical meditation, or like calm abiding, that's the other one, concentration, and then review meditation. So we probably don't do that as much in the West, because in the East, they memorize whole books, not just paragraphs. You know, it's just hard to even imagine, isn't it? But then they use that and they sit and just review. So you could memorize something. You can start small, or if you memorize eventually maybe the 21 Taras or something, you can just kind of recite that and think about it. But that's reviewing it and analyzing it sort of different. Does everybody understand the difference between it? Okay. And then you can use a glance meditation. I used to do that here when I met with a few folks, some guys, and I had one of those reincarnation moments. Like two guys sitting in the, I had two brothers too, so it's kind of comfortable. And I just thought, oh wow, we've been in a monastery before. It's like a real comforting feeling. And before we had Lam Rim, we would just try to raise the topics about what we were supposed to have read. So I was like Hermione, because they never read. So I said, I'll do a review. I'll do a glance meditation. So that, what that looks like is you've read something and then you skim it. You know how you actually study for tests in college? It's kind of similar. You sort of skim it, and you might read the topics and then think about it as you're reading it. You could read it nice and slow. So I would, if you read it or you record something, you can meditate on it as you've read it. So now you can review what you've read in your mind, but you're using it as a glance meditation. So you'd read a topic and kind of think about it. And then the Lam Rim, there's always, you know, one and then A and then one and two and then A, and they go in, and then you go back to two, and then it goes like that with all the subheadings, and all the subheadings are the topics, and then you can just think about each part as you move along. So that's something that you can try. So tonight I want to give you all these ideas so that when you go home you can try all of them. So when you're creating your practice, you want to try to create the habit of this familiarity we talked about in meditation, that it's, the word meditation means becoming familiar with and then something positive. So you're trying to create that habit that's going to be helpful for you and always there for you and comfortable. And Geshe-la kind of goes, have you ever heard him say, he says things in a way that always makes us laugh, but you don't want to walk by your cushion and want to vomit. So he says that in such a delicate way. But you want to create a sweetness about your cushion and seeing it, a longing that you want to be there. Okay, so in meditation, the reason, and we've talked about what it does biologically or chemically to you, and I've got a thing about cortisol. Sometimes there's medical people in here. Who knows about cortisol in here? You do? You guys know? Do you know how good it is and then too much is negative? That kind of thing. So this is going to start off really happy and nice, and then it's going to be like, oh my God, so just stick with it. Because cortisol is a pretty intense hormone that we need to address. How to stay healthy. This is from stress management stuff online. Cortisol in your body. So cortisol is an important hormone in the body, secreted by the adrenal glands and involved in the following functions and more. Proper glucose metabolism, regulation of blood pressure, insulin release for blood sugar maintenance, immune function, and inflammatory response. I see a lot of increase in inflammatory things these days, I notice. This is real tiny font. Normally, it's present in the body at higher levels in the morning and its lowest at night. Although stress isn't the only reason that cortisol is secreted into the bloodstream, it has been termed the stress hormone, because it's also secreted in higher levels during the body's fight or flight response to stress. And it's responsible for several stress-related changes in the body. So small increases of cortisol, just when a little bit comes up, have some positive effects. So it gives you that quick burst of energy for survival, a heightened memory function, a burst of an increased immunity, lower sensitivity to pain, and helps maintain homeostasis in the body. Yeah, sounds pretty good, right? So, while cortisol is an important and helpful part of the body's response to stress, it's important that the body's relaxation response to be activated so that, you know, you come back down. So who's had a really strong adrenaline kind of cortisol? Everybody's experienced that, right? But do you know what it feels like when you come down off of it? It's pretty icky feeling. I would describe it as icky. Feels kind of like, ugh, you just feel toxic inside and you're more tired and it's not a comfortable feeling. So you want to let that stress, I mean the relaxation response, kick in. So when it's activated, so the body's functions can return to normal following a stressful event. Unfortunately, in our current high-stress culture, the body's stress response is activated so often that the body doesn't always have a chance to return to normal. So this results in a state of chronic stress. So here's the list for that. Higher and more prolonged levels of cortisol in the bloodstream so have been shown to have negative effects. Impaired cognitive performance, suppressed thyroid function, blood sugar imbalances such as hypoglycemia, decreased bone density. Is that surprising for anybody? I mean, I never would have imagined that. Decreased muscle tissue. Surprising. Higher blood pressure, that's not too surprising. Lowered immunity and inflammatory responses in the body. Slowed wound healing and other health consequences. Increased abdominal fat. Abdominal, I said that wrong. That's kind of surprising. Which is associated with a greater amount of health problems than the fat deposited in other areas of the body. Because some of that in that area of the body increase heart attacks, strokes, and the development of metabolic syndrome. Higher levels of bad cholesterol and it lowers levels of good cholesterol, which can lead to other health problems. So, to keep cortisol levels healthy and under control, the body's relaxation response should be activated after the fight or flight response occurs. You can learn to relax your body with various stress management techniques. Where do you think we're going with that? You can also make lifestyle changes in order to keep your body from reacting to the stress in the first place. The following have been found by many to be very helpful in relaxing the body and aiding the body in maintaining healthy levels. Guided imagery, journaling, self-hypnosis, exercise, yoga, listening to music, breathing exercises, meditation, sex, and other techniques. So if you're looking for excuses for any of those, I'm just working on my cortisol, honey. So, is that surprising? The last time, this was pretty impacting for some people. It's kind of shocking. I mean, I know I do have anxiety, so I know like it kind of kicks in, and then it feels like it's hard to get out of the body, so I see what they're talking about. Yeah. Do you guys have any comments on that or any ways that you work with it? Do you have ways that you get rid of that, you come down from it? I know when I used to own a coffee shop, I mean, it was like one big adrenaline rush all the time. And then you needed it to get the work done when it was really crazy. But then it was just a very uncomfortable feeling afterwards. Anybody comment on that? Okay. What, Sean, do you know anything other than that that we read about? Good job. This is for the people at home so they can hear.
Just the flight or fight sort of phenomena. And that, I mean, when it stays around for a long period of time, even if it's just like slightly elevated, then it also can become pretty toxic to your body.
Even when it's just slightly elevated. Yeah. And we probably all live with so much of that. Like, we could talk to the insurance people about that. We could take care of Obamacare, right? We could fix it. Thanks. I'm being very positive about it. We could do a lot with healthcare, I think, if we could just get our minds under control. So many things could be solved. Okay. So let's go back to the discriminating bias mind. And when we think of, I think the bullet and the bird's kind of a good example. But those are objects, like something happening on the outside. You know, we're breaking something, getting the car hit. You know, getting the car hit. I just hit my own car. So hitting your own car on something, an object. And she asked me, I guess I didn't have liability, so, or what is it? I didn't have collision. My dad just gave me the car, so I have to sell my other car, and that car's dying, and now I have this car that I just, it's kind of funny. She said, is the pole okay? Yeah, the pole's fine. So, I guess I could have had the pole fixed or something. So, objects do get in the way, but we're going to take that all that energy of thinking about objects and thinking about things that happen and put it to people, because that's really where it's most difficult. I mean, I don't know. We can get mad at the dishwasher. We can really find a way to get mad at anything. But it's more difficult when it involves people. So we're going to talk about friends, enemies, and strangers and the problems that this brings to ourselves and others. So when we feel very biased, and we don't really think we are, like, did you have a chance, when you looked at things this week, did it change the way that you looked at things? A little bit, yeah? Did it change the way that you realized how much you wanted things to kind of go your way, or how much you wanted to be comfortable, or, you know, were you aware of the fact that you were doing aversion attachment? So we want to think about, if we're doing the same thing with people, it isn't really different. But the outcome is much heavier, right? So if it's someone that we don't want to be around, or someone we want to be around, we're still doing the same thing. Like, I like you, let's get together. I don't really want you in my life, let's move you away. I don't even know you, so I don't need to bother about you. You know, it's all just moving through camps of familiarity, moving towards this and away from this. And it's sort of like being in a, I just thought of that, but it's like being in a pinball game all day long. We're just bouncing around, but we feel like we don't really have any control, that we just don't like that. And even if we're not that cruel with it, we're still doing it. Can you think of people that you're doing that with, that you are drawn to others and want to get away from others? Now, if someone is really toxic and they're harmful to you, mind, and you can't, the way I like to word it is, it's not like, it's my responsibility to be able to deal. But I put it, if I can't practice enough, then I need to remove myself from the situation instead of thinking they need to go away. That helps me a little bit. Does that sound a little different? So if I can't practice through this, if I just can't wrap my mind around it, or the anger arises and it just can't make it not arise, then it's not good for either person, right? But if I can work through it, then it's really helpful. And I think it's the most difficult thing ever, is really to see the other person, whatever's coming at you, is the most beneficial thing that you could ever have in your life. The person who's the most difficult. Hey, you had the wet karma, huh? So, one way to look at that is kind of funny, that if everybody in this room was so nice and kind, which we usually are in this class, we're like, hey, how you doing? You know, everybody's real sweet. How you doing? We're nice. And it feels like, oh, that was like being in a nice slippery pool, real easy. Go to class, come home. And so nothing really arises, no aversion and no attachment. It just feels comfortable, right? Well, if you think about it, if you're just comfortable all the time, then you haven't really grown. Not that you're not growing in here, but, you know, like if you haven't been through the fiery hells of Avicii, then you're not really pushing your limits, and so you aren't changing your brain as much. So that's why, it's hard to not smirk when I say that, that's why your ex-husbands and all your people in your life and your ex-wives and your ex-friends and everybody who's been the most difficult to you are the most precious of all. And it's just so hard to think of it like that. So my ex-husband, when I first started practicing, it was kind of fun. Kim was there at this time. She knows all about that. And he heard something. I must have been talking to someone else about they're the most precious, the person who's the most difficult. So I must have been, I don't know, even know the situation. Maybe I was talking to Kim, you know, talking about it. And he came in the room one night and he said, so I'm your greatest teacher and you need me? yeah, you know, it's good, it's good. But the more that I worked through it, the more compassion I had, and the more I stopped getting involved in feeling like a victim, it became so amazing. Like, my mind got better and better and better and better and better. Really kind of shocking. So if you can stay, if you can practice, but you don't want to push yourself where if you can't practice and all you are is agitated, it's not really going to help. But if you can kind of rise up a little bit, and I think we've used the word bear some hardship in here. So if you can take it a little, and you can have compassion, because if someone's yelling at you, who's suffering? We talked about that before, right? Who's suffering the most? Yeah, thank you. So they have so much anger rising, because it's at that point when they're feeling white hot, like when here comes the flare of anger, and you're just standing there feeling like, I don't have anything to do with it. I'm not part of this. Like, why? You know, it's all coming at you. And it feels like that, right? Like, ah, Mr. Bill. So if you realize that you have a choice, they don't have a choice because it's already arisen. Now, once it starts to rise in you, you don't have a choice either. You're kind of going along with it. And then, but if you don't bite the, oh, where is it? If you don't do this, don't bite the hook, then you have a choice. As soon as you bite it, you're kind of going in the fray. But if you do the work and you apply the tools and you do that and you don't bite the hook, they're still coming at you because it's rising. You know, it's anger. And you kind of calm down and relax. Not only if you relax, but if you can build some compassion, and this is big, heavy stuff. It may not happen overnight. If you can build a little compassion, if you can look at somebody who's really mad at you and they're just like, blah, and you have a little bit of compassion and you don't look snarky, you have to try to find that look. It's kind of hard at first. Eric's like, yeah. Because when you first start trying it, I think they're practicing equanimity back there. When you first start trying it, it looks snarky, doesn't it? Uh-huh. It's very sincere. You can tell. It does. But you do know that he's trying. And so you have the very good fortune of two Dharma practitioners who, even if he's looking like, I'm faking it here, she's like, well, at least he's faking it. I mean, at least he's trying. When you do it sincerely. Yeah, as long as you're not doing like, it's okay. You know, you don't want to be patronizing. But I remember there was a time that I finally got it, and there must have been a whole other thing that came up in this face that never happened before, but I was trying to have compassion. And it was such an amazing feeling when you really, really see, oh my God, they're suffering so much that it actually kind of hurts. And then you're not thinking about yourself anymore. You're not so concerned that, because I realized I kind of stopped hurting. It was the most beautiful moment. And I just sat with compassion and I shut up. I just stopped talking. I didn't cry. I didn't respond. I didn't yell. All of which I'm fully capable of with a lot of practice. No, I just didn't do anything. I didn't react. And you guys know that, react, you know, we just react over and over and over. I just didn't do anything. And just like, oh. And then there was nothing to come up against anymore. There's nowhere for that anger. They want you to sort of absorb that anger because they're so miserable. And it was almost like, if you could take it as white magic, I had a ball like, you know, back at you, but not in anger, just in compassion. And it just simmered the person down. It makes them uncomfortable because they're kind of like, you know, it's all just sitting there and they're, yeah, it really is like magic. I was just watching Merlin, so I have magic on the mind. I do that with my teenage daughter, but it feels like that. So I encourage you to try to find that. So don't start with the something really juicy. Pick something really simple. It might have to be an inanimate object the first time you do it. It won't be as exciting. But then try it with someone and let them, just let it arise in you and see if you can just have compassion. And have you heard of Tonglen? Have you guys ever heard of that yet? A little bit, yeah? Because Geshe-la is teaching that now. So if you're coming Sunday morning, you're hearing about it. So if you really were like kick butt Buddhist work here, and you could go to the boot camp, you could take on their anger and imagine that you could breathe it in like black smoke. And it's not going to hurt you because it's not, you're just taking it in and letting it go back out, and you breathe out white light, and you're giving them the white light of your compassion and your kindness, and you're wishing for them to, for their suffering to end. And, you know, that's really hard to do in the moment. I'll say, whatever, I have to do this, have come, don't fake it, and then do Tonglen. So you have to wait till it all kind of comes natural. But try a little bit of all of it, and just encourage you to see what happens. So the place where aversion and attachment are rooted. So when it arises in you, yourself. So if you bite the hook, and you feel it arising in yourself. You feel like you want so clearly to say, "I'm mad at you." I'll point to someone who's not there. Mad at you, because you're yelling at me, so I'm mad at you. But we did the brownie thing, for those of you that were here for the brownie experiment, to know that anger, it appears that they're angry, but we really don't know what's going on in their mind. So when you realize it's your situation, and when you have anger arising, it's just like the concentrated I that's arising. So here's another interesting challenge. I don't like that. I want ice cream. The I is arising so strongly. I want this. I don't want that. But when it arises really strong with anger, which is why they use anger so often in teachings, is because you can choose to make it an opportunity to be fully aware that the I is arising. And that's really difficult stuff, but it's like you can find it because it's so freaking mad. And then you have to go, well, who's actually mad? Like, it's kind of funny. Because you've got somebody that's going, hey, maybe I should try a little equanimity. Well, who's doing that? And who's mad? You know, it's a pretty weird moment when you can kind of feel that there's something separate there. So then when it arises, it's a golden opportunity to say, oh, there it is. There's this nasty, self-cherishing, blobby animal. It's just so evident. It's right there. But when you talk about it, when you're feeling really nice and happy, like, yes, self-cherishing is the root of all ignorance. It's just so hard to grab it. We can talk about it. We can intellectualize it. We know what we're talking about. It makes sense. But when you're in the middle of it, you can feel it. So that's another thing to try. Like, look right at it. If you feel jealous, there's a really good way to see the eye. You know, who are you looking at, kind of thing. And then, like, what just arose, you don't even really like it anyway, whatever arises. So it's another thing to do. So let's try. And then I have this note to read. I must have found something juicy in here. This is Venerable Thupten Chodron's book. So she, I don't know if any of you were around here then. Did you guys get to see her? Anybody else ever see? She's pretty famous. Do you know who she is? Have you heard her name? Yeah. She came to the center, so that was really exciting for us. So she has Savasti Abbey in Washington State. And you can actually go there and take vows, like, for 3 months. You can kind of try it out. Or you can go visit, too. But this book is amazing. These are Lam Rim meditations in a book. So if you wanted to go through your analytical meditations, it's all in the book, and you can just go step by step. It's lovely. Look, I haven't even opened the CD. And there's a CD. I should try that. So here's some alternatives. That's why I opened this page to just meditating. I like the way she writes. It's real simple. In the context of meditating on the gradual path, mindfulness and breathing is done as a preliminary meditation, mainly for the purpose of calming the mind and subduing distracting thoughts. And the majority of the session involves analytical or checking meditation on a specific Lam Rim topic. As noted above, in the other context, an entire meditation session may be done using mindfulness of breathing. In addition, there are meditation objects other than the breath that may be used for calming the mind and cultivating concentration. While the breath works well for some people as the object of meditation, when cultivating concentration or serenity, for others it doesn't. For example, some people may have asthma and find breathing difficult. People who have bad allergies often can't breathe through their nose. Fortunately, the Buddha taught a number of other meditation objects that can be used to develop concentration, such as loving kindness, the parts of the body, we've done some of those in here, and so forth. Describing all of these is beyond the scope of this book, but one that is commonly used is the Tibetan tradition is the in the Tibet tradition is the visualized image of the Buddha. You know, we talked about just doing visualization. Here we do not try to see the Buddha with our eyes, but instead see him in our mind's eye, imagining Shakyamuni Buddha appearing instantly in the space in front of you. He's the size of your thumb, visualizing a small image like this. Visualizing a small image like this helps to focus the mind and prevents distraction. You may want to look at a statue or painting of the Buddha before your meditation session in order to remember the features. But in your session, lower your eyes and let the image of the Buddha arise in your mind. Going over all the details individually in your mind's eye helps you to remember them. After doing that, focus on the entire image. Be satisfied with the clarity of the image that appears without making your mind tight in an effort to reconstruct each and every detail. If the clarity declines, review the Buddha's features again. You can open your eyes and then focus your mind on the entire image. If the stability of your concentration is interrupted by thoughts and sensation, just bring it back to the image of the Buddha. Using the image of the Buddha as a meditation object to develop mindfulness and concentration has several unique advantages. It helps us to remember the Buddha continually, and thus to accumulate positive potential and increase our feeling of connection to him. When death approaches, it will be easier to recollect the Buddha and his qualities, which will soothe the mind and maintain it in a positive state during the death process. It also increases our ability to visualize, which is helpful in other meditation practices in the Tibetan tradition. So has anybody tried a visualization yet? Yeah, a little bit. It can be really difficult. The main thing I want you to get is to stay with it. Even if for a long time nothing actually appears, just keep doing it. Just keep doing it. Just keep doing it. And remember, in this one, we're not doing any other thing. We're not doing an analytical or anything. You're just trying to visualize. All right. So let's do the equanimity meditation. It was a dark and stormy night. I wish I could read this like Vincent Price. That would be awesome. Focus your attention. Okay. This one's a little bit longer. I don't know why rain makes me laugh. It just seems funny. All right, you ready? Focus your attention on your breath again. Use one of the various breathing meditations, counting the breaths, 9 round, settling the mind into the moment to a more concentrated state. Generate the strong intention to do this meditation in order to overcome self-centered bias and judgments and to develop the mind of perfect equanimity and balance towards others. Imagine in the space in front of you 3 people. Someone you like, someone you dislike, and someone you feel indifferent towards. Keep these 3 images in your mind throughout the meditation. The indifferent person may be simply someone who opened a door for you, or a waiter or waitress. Someone that you don't know, though. First, focus on your friend and allow your feelings for that person to arise strongly. Feel your conviction that this person is definitely and truly a friend. This person who is good to you and fulfills your needs and wishes. Also, feel how you really want this person to be happy. And and identify yourself with these good feelings. Now shift the attention to your enemy or someone you simply dislike. Someone who is not kind to you, who does not satisfy your needs, who annoys you and makes you angry, who hurts you. Regard this person carefully. And just look at the feelings you have about this person. And now shift your attention to the stranger, the person you feel indifferent about, someone you barely know. And just notice the person and the feelings of indifference that arise. And now consider and recognize that the nature of your relationships with each of these three people and the labels that you've put on them are based solely on what they do or don't do for you at this point in time. Think of people who have been your friend but then became your enemy, and vice versa, or strangers who became friends or enemies. Each of these labels is temporary and impermanent. It's just what the situation is at the current time. Now move your attention back to your friend and imagine a situation that would cause the friendship to end. Imagine your friend turning against you. Experience the resentment and anger and hurt that you would feel in such a situation. Do you still feel warm and friendly towards this person? Do you still wish him or her well? Do you still want the person to be happy? Where is your friend now? Remember that this person was not your friend before you were acquainted, and recognize how easily this person could cease to be your friend now, just as you have imagined. And think to yourself, there is no sound reason for feeling kind and loving towards only the friend of this moment. Relationships have changed in the past and will continue to change. Today's friend can become tomorrow's enemy. Now move your attention to the present enemy. And imagine a situation in which you could be drawn together and become close. Maybe through a common interest, a word of praise or kindness. Look at that person and your feelings toward them very carefully. Are your feelings softening? Becoming warmer? You can learn to feel warmly towards your enemies. This has happened before, and it will happen again. Why do we hold so strongly to the concept that this person is definitely enemy? Now move your attention to the stranger. Imagine how one act of kindness or anger from this person could immediately turn him or her into a friend or an enemy. There is no inherent definite stranger there. There is no sound reason for the feelings of indifference that we hold on to. Remember that your present friend and your present enemy were both strangers before. And this enemy could become a friend or an enemy now. maintain your awareness of these three people in front of you and think about how fragile and permanent of these relationships. It is only your misconceived belief in the concreteness of these labels, a friend, enemy, and stranger, that holds your mind back from the possibility of change and fluidity. Your friend, enemy, and stranger all want happiness just as much as you do. In this respect, we are all equal. Also, everyone is equal in having the potential to develop their minds to the fullest extent and to achieve ultimate clarity and compassion. The differences that we see in people are superficial, based only on our mistaken and narrow self-centered views. In fact, everyone is equal in deserving our care and compassion. None of this means that we should not discriminate at all. On a practical level, our ability to distinguish between actions and individuals is necessary. Naturally, we feel closer to some people and are wise to keep our distance from others. This is not in any way contradictory to the meditation. The point of the meditation is to develop equal concern, equal regard for everyone, for their well-being, whether they help or harm us at this point in time, and to see that the labels that we put on others are often arbitrary, mistaken, and very changeable. And now dedicate the positive energy and insights to the well-being and happiness of all living beings. Bring your awareness back. That one can be pretty juicy for people sometimes. Do you like it? Do you like it? And my other, we've got a no back there. Do you want to talk about it? Mike, did he leave? Chris, you don't want to talk about it? Okay. The whole idea of doing it, mainly with a difficult person. Yeah. Did you pick a really difficult one? Yeah. Sometimes it's hard to pick the real tough one. We used to laugh in DB because we'd walk out of class and Kim and I would say, oh, you were my friend in this one. So sometimes we pick people that, in the room is cute. This is so powerful. Was anybody kind of surprised when you really see how fragile and how easily the camps move back and forth? It is, isn't it? Because can you think of friends that you had in grade school that you don't even know now? And they were your best friend ever. And you don't even know that you forgot them. I mean, it's like that forgotten until you might hear a name and go, oh, I remember that person. So they're completely off your radar. But when they were in your life, they were so important. So my bully story from grade school, I call him my own private bully. Of course, they all teased me. I had a difficult 7th and 8th grade. It was in a Lutheran grade school. It was painful. So my girlfriend and I were the ones that they made fun of. And pretty much all the boys, there were some that weren't really jumping in on it. But because of Facebook, or Crackbook, whatever you want to call it, we all found each other again, the whole class. And we were together for about 8 years. So we became pretty close. But, just seeing their faces, and I've done all my work on them and forgiven them and all that good stuff, but even seeing their faces is kind of like, ugh, it arises. And so they wanted to have a reunion. And we all got together. I went back to Louisville. And the one boy, he's a man, I know. So he said on Facebook he wanted to pick me up at the airport because I needed a ride in. It's like, my own private bully's going to pick me up at the airport. And, yay! I'm excited, but I was excited. I could be an adult and be excited on one level, but there were parts of me that were just like, I don't want to do this, you know. I just, it's still painful. Not now, but I mean, it's, you know, it's interesting how that stays. So he picked me up and hugged, and he's just, he's a guy. You know, he's a man. He's got kids. He's got a wife. Like, oh, he's a guy. He's my age, obviously. He's not this little boy. He's not going to spit wads or, you know, be mean right now. It was amusing to watch the whole thing. So we go to this restaurant, and it's a little awkward. You know, we sit down, and he grabs my hands and looks at me, and he's tears in his eyes, and he's begging for forgiveness. It was so freaking powerful. And he wanted to know all about karma because he knew he was screwed. That was nice. That was really nice. He obviously had a very loving relationship. He loved his daughter. And so what ensued, I think I can say it without crying, is he told me his story. The pain that I suffered my whole entire life from all of this couldn't touch the pain that he had and when he grew up and why he was so angry with his mother. Couldn't touch it. And so I thought I was the, you know, I'm the victim. I'm the one that got hurt. Y'all need to deal this. But wow. We were just chicks that he was just angry at. He was angry at every woman he ever met until he finally kind of saw the light. That was amazing. And then when we got to the reunion, they were all apologizing. It's kind of funny. And the one boy had passed away already, and he was really ridiculed, like severely ridiculed. And they said, we can never apologize to him, you know, because he's gone. And then they looked at me and they said, but we can all make it up to you. I was like, okay. And we still had another reunion, and we still get together. So, and he texts me all the time and shows me pictures. He adopts children. He's my age, so he's over the big half a century hump and still adopts children and fosters them. He's amazing. He has a children's theater. Like, he's an amazing man. So when people complain about Facebook, I'm like, you know, that was beautiful. I never would have even found those people or tried to look them up. So with Friend, Enemy, Stranger, that's a really good example of, I mean, I didn't hold hatred for him because I had done the work, but it was tricky. Still had some residual seeds of ick in there. But now it's completely not only healed, it's absolutely beautiful. So if it's difficult for you, stay with it and keep doing it. And you may want to go back and try a person that's not so painful. She's like, yeah, I think that's a good idea. I have one guy that I use, and it's my kick butt, really most difficult person. I've only really yelled at two people in my life ever. And I really yelled at him. And that guy I told you about was in his face, and he's like 6 foot, and I was like poking my finger. And so I've done that once, you know. But I use him in this equanimity thing, and it's amazing what it does. It's really softened and softened and softened. So now I have so much compassion for him. I mean, I just feel like he's the one that's suffering. I'm okay. So encourage you to try it again and again. Does anybody want to come? Yeah. Chris is right there.
That question, it's usually easy to get the attachment and aversion ends of it, but if you're trying to practice compassion towards people, I'd have times where someone that you're indifferent to is difficult.
Oh, the indifferent part.
Yeah.
Oh, I said the friend and enemy, you can kind of see how strong, that arises pretty strong,
yeah,
so you can
you
see
can
it.
Yeah, you can pick those too, yeah. But then, I mean, you pick a stranger, or if I pick someone in the class tonight that you're here for a good reason, and it's hard. That indifference is hard to come by. What do you have any suggestions on?
Yeah. Okay. So if you were to think of the percentages, if this represents the percentage of everybody on the earth, the people that you know that you feel really kind about, what percentage would that be?
That's hard to.
It's hard to even. Yeah. You know, it would be so minuscule, right? And the people that you hate, probably less, I'm hoping.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Yes.
Very few. You know, like what, maybe one or two? Maybe one. So think of the percentages. So Kevin, right?
Yes.
So Kevin's world, the people that he knows, it's very, very small. So Everybody else is the indifferent category. The whole world. So when you think about that, that's where the work. And that doesn't answer how, but it answers, oh my God, you know, that's like everybody. So Venerable Rubina talked one time about, let's see, does anybody remember what city that was? Because it's, she's from, where she's from, do you guys remember? But there was maybe it's a city that she knew, but it was similar to another city in its sound. And so if it was Melbourne, we could say that. So she looks at an article and it says hundreds of people just died or, you know, some catastrophe in the city. She, you know, whoosh, attention. Oh, my God, in her Australian accent. Oh, that was Melbourne, not Melbourne. And she went, holy crap. You know, what just happened there? Like, I don't care about the people in Melbourne. I only care about the people in Melbourne. And that was a great example of the indifferent category, you know, that those are the people that we need to care about. Still doesn't answer how. But if you were, I think if you saw someone suffering, you would probably have compassion for them. If you saw or if you saw something really joyful, you could rejoice for them. So it's kind of like when there's nothing really happening, that kind of just.
But even if you walk up to someone on the street and if you never met this person before, so you couldn't be more indifferent towards that person, but you have compassion towards them. That, I mean, that can kind of go. They seem to go in one group or the other. The middle group is
okay. So here's the how. There's several ways you can do it. In Buddhism, we talk about that if you believe in reincarnation, if you believe in beginningless and endless, then every single solitary being that has ever existed, every ant, every roach, every woman, every man, every dog, has been your mother. You've heard that, right? Mm-hmm. So you actually want to take all the indifference that you feel and bring it to the point of tears almost, to the point of where you think of everyone as your kind mother. And then you raise the compassion based on knowing that everyone has had some relationship with you and cared for you in an amazing way. So that's one way, which is pretty big. You know, if every being's been your mother. So everybody, we've all been each other's mother in here. Pretty cool, huh? Thanks. Just want to say thanks. Thank you. I tell my daughter, you know, she says, you're the best mother I've ever had. And I say, you're the best daughter I've ever had. And that's our little joke because I only have one daughter and she only has one mother. But then we say, but as Buddhist, that says a lot. That's our little private Idaho. Let's see. So raising everyone's been your mother. Okay, so then you take that feeling, everyone's been your mother, and it starts out kind of warm and fuzzy, like cortisol, like, yeah, everyone's been my mother, you know, how loving and kind. But then you think of all of them suffering the torments of hell, the hell realms, and everything, you're responsible to get them all out. And then here comes compassion, right? Can you feel it kind of arise? Like, I want to get everybody out, not just my friends. And I don't want to step on my enemy's finger so they slip further. You know, I want to get everybody out. And that helps it. You find what you have to do. Venerable Tendron used to talk about break your heart a little bit. Read some stories. Go find a way to break through the barrier to raise your compassion if you need to sometimes. You have to know, sometimes you have to take a news break. You know, you have to know what's too much. Does that help a little?
It does.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah. Anybody else? Friend, enemy, stranger moments. Okay. Chris, nothing? Okay. All right. So I have another thing to read from here. So we're going to talk about that long-term meditation practice that we're all embarking on when we walk out the door here. Let's see. I found something interesting when I was reading it right before you came in that I need to do. She's talking about the morning is the best time. We've kind of talked about that. So sometimes we get to the cushion and thoughts come, I should return this phone call, or the children need me, or I found the solution to a problem we were dealing with. You know, like you want to get up and take care of something. These are all ego's tricks to distract us from what is important. When these thoughts arise, stop and ask yourself, is there really anything that desperately needs to be done in the next half an hour such that somebody is going to be drastically harmed if I don't do it? Sometimes you have to do that with yourself, to just sit down. If the answer is no, then do your practice and don't worry about anything. This way of checking in with ourselves enables us to confirm that we have the time to meditate. So just as nourishing our body every day is important and we take time to eat, nourishing ourselves spiritually is also essential. Meditation is time to become friends with ourselves. It is not selfish each day to make time to be quiet, be present in the moment, and nourish our good qualities. By cultivating our own good qualities and letting ourselves be content, we are able to give more to others during the rest of the day. And then I thought this was cool. Consistency in your meditation practice is important, and on the days when you feel lazy or rushed, some self-discipline may be necessary. If you have difficulty finding time for Dharma practice, write it in your daily calendar that you have an appointment with Buddha at the certain time. If you want to meditate for 15, 30, or 60 minutes each morning, schedule it on your calendar. That's what I've been thinking about. Schedule it in. And then later, if someone calls and wants you to do something, you can truthfully say, I'm sorry, I have an appointment that I can't break. If you have to excuse yourself from an activity in order to go to bed a little earlier, and that's the part that I really need to work on, makes it easier to get up, so that you are well rested for your appointment with the Enlightened One in the morning, do that. We don't stand up dates with our friends just because we're tired or have other things to do, so we should certainly keep our appointments with the Buddha. I think that's kind of beautiful. Yeah, it's when you have children, you know that sometimes if things are really difficult at night, like the bedtime ritual, that you say, well, we should just get to bed earlier and everything will be better, like the whole world will run better. And then you think, well, how are we going to get to bed earlier if we don't change anything? So we should make bath time start earlier. That'll make everything better in the whole world. Like, well, how are we going to make bath time earlier because we're not finished eating? Well, then we need to eat earlier. And then the bath time, you know. And then you can see it really does start with the morning and how you determine you want your day to be. So if you want certain things to happen, and I'm talking to myself, I want to go to bed earlier and I'm not doing it, and then I can get up much easier. And so when I first started practicing and I was really gung-ho, I would get up at the same time, 6:30 or something, no matter what time I went to bed, to prove to myself, like, if you go to bed later, you're just going to be more tired and you don't want to do that. And I think that kind of helps, because then it made me try to be more consistent. And I think if I can give you any help, consistency is really, really, really helpful. I know some people that practice here and they're amazing. They leave the party. I don't know how to do that. They go home and they go to bed early and they get their rest. So they feel like getting up and meditating with a fresh mind. This is a fun thing. She's so much older now, it's kind of cute. So these are Miranda's rules for Happy Land. They did it here. Going to read them to you. I keep thinking I wrote how old. Well, she started when she was 8, so she's probably 8 or 9. So for Happy Land, number one, this is like, what's his name? Countdown? The 10 top? Letterman, David Letterman, I was thinking. Nobody in Happy Land is allowed to hurt another person in Happy Land or to be mean to another person. Mr. Rogers, too. Nobody's allowed to spread rumors about other people that are not true. Use only kind words. Don't do something to somebody if they do not say okay. No killing animals unless you are very hungry, and that includes bugs. She's now vegetarian. No stealing or taking things that are not yours. Don't yell if somebody has a headache. No teasing. I vote for that one. Be respectful and do not show off. Everybody has to smile. That's number 11. Everybody has to smile at least once a day. I forgot about that. We used to have a game that we'd say, how many people can you make smile today? And we'd come home and I'd say, 28. She's like, 15. That was fun. So that's all I've got. We actually finished early. What do we have? Anything else anybody wants to talk about for the whole 5 weeks or any topics that are difficult? Now's your chance. Kim, you got anything? Eric, you got anything? Okay. Got one.
Could you discuss the use of, like, the malas?
Oh, yeah, yeah. You had asked me that.
And the prayer wheels.
And the prayer wheels. Okay. Like, those...
You sell the ones that
rotate.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay, good. So these, so the prayer wheels have almost always that I've encountered have Om Mani Padme Hum in there, the compassion mantra. And Geshe-la's teaching on that on Sunday morning. So some of you may have heard there's many different layers of meanings for that. And so when you spin it, it's as if you're sending out the prayers out into the world. And the prayers have so much potency simply, merely, because, and they're in Sanskrit mostly, because they have been recited for thousands and thousands of years. And so even if we said joy is being or something, you know, if we had an English mantra and we said it for thousands of years, it too would have meat behind it, like some power behind it. And holy beings have said these and become, you know, their enlightenment is all kind of encompassed in these prayers. And so contemporary modern ones can even have microfish in them. So I've heard millions and millions of mantras can be put into a prayer wheel. And then the ones that you spin, you probably... We don't have anybody here, really. Every once in a while, Venerable Lama La uses it. But have you seen it in movies in Tibet, where they hold a prayer wheel and they keep it going? We see it on retreat some. And that's just simply keeping your mind on Om Mani Padme Hum. And it's... the definition of mantra, do you remember? The definition of mantra? Putting you on the spot. It's that which protects the mind. And so it's kind of cool because when you're saying a mantra, not only what you're saying, but just the mere fact that you're saying something virtuous is keeping your mind from thinking something negative. So that's another way it protects your mind. So that's the prayer wheel. And malas, you have ones that have 108 beads, 28 beads, 21. And they aren't holy, really. They're just counters. And they're not to be considered jewelry. That's a way to look at them, to not wear them as a fashion statement, but or to think of them as jewelry in your mind, but to think of them as a counter, something that you're going to count your prayers on. So you can use any mantra that you like. A lot of people say Om Mani Padme Hum with each bead. And Tara mantras, all different kinds of mantras that we do throughout. And you could use it as part of your meditation practice where you might say you want to do Medicine Buddha mantras if someone that you love is ailing or sick. If you've been given a practice, you might have mantras to use the Vajrasattva practice. You use a mala to count 21 or 28 Vajrasattva mantras. And, does that help? Anything else about that? You see some people wear them and some people wear them on the wrist.
Is there like a particular rotation, like counterclockwise?
Yeah, clockwise. Always.
Clockwise?
Mm-hmm. Just like the stupa. Who's going to be circumambulating the stupa tonight? That'll be fun. Maybe not. I can't think of anything else about that. It's so similar to a rosary. I mean, it's just like a rosary. It's a counter. So I'm going to put it in. And if it's really raining, the roads actually, if you've ever experienced under the viaduct, can flood quite easily. And they'll have flares up and the policeman, everybody will have to turn left and you just go around. So that could be a condition happening right now. What else? Anything that you want to ask about the whole 5 weeks? Good? Oh, yeah, got some. Can you...
Could you just talk about what Buddhism in a nutshell is? Or is it Buddhism 101? No, it's Buddhism.
Yeah, Buddhism in a nutshell, and this is Meditation 101. It's going to go over, it's going to take like the whole picture of all of Buddhism. Who's taken it recently? You guys did? Where does it, I don't remember it per se. It starts with the history, right? And yeah, it really goes through everything, doesn't it? It's quite amazing. I was surprised. Let's see, what's a good way to put that? that it covered actually quite difficult and heavy topics. I mean, it wasn't light. It's light the way it light in the way it kind of skims over everything, but it wasn't like it was going to try to avoid anything. It's like, here it is. This is Buddhism in a nutshell. And there's a there's a description right there. Did you get the book yet? I can tell you about the book. Okay, there's a green book out there that Venerable Amy Miller wrote. You got it? Kevin's like, yeah. CD? She talks so slow in there that I'd be careful driving with it because it's like, I mean, she's got an. She came here and she is amazing. She is really amazing. She's got these wolf eyes that I sat right there. And when she made a point, she kind of went like that. And it was like, wow, they're just so powerful, so blue, so beautiful. She's a wonderful teacher. And so that book, I haven't read it, but I came out after I went to the class. I just never read it, but I heard it's really good. Yeah. So you could read that first or you could read it along with the course. But I remember loving the course, that it just felt like I knew, I wanted to know the synopsis.
People being online. I guess.
Oh, yeah.
So is that one also, I mean.
Have they picked the next time? Is that what you're asking?
I mean, for like, how do you register for like the online? Is that through the website? If you want to, like, if I only can do it every other Tuesday in person, can I do it every other Tuesday?
Oh, the class online, right. Right now they're they're streaming, and so you can go online and watch the classes. And then you can go home and listen. If you missed any of these, you can listen to the recordings of mine or anybody else's, but apparently you'll never get number 3 with me. So I missed every time number 3, all 3 times. So you can go to Dave Mackless and get number 3. But you can go check. Now, Chris, can everybody go to that or only members only?
Just for members.
Bummer.
The online, the streaming's for members?
Well, the streaming's... The streaming's only for members? It's free, so become a member. Requiring to become a member is going to a 15-minute discussion and putting your name down on a sheet of paper. It's pretty complicated. But you are... I think you have to get a number, or you have to be.
You get a login name, or you pick one, and then you get a password, and then you log in with that.
But how do they know if you're a member or not? Do you have to get invited?
No, you go and say you want to be a member, and then they'll take your information and then say.
Oh, take your information. Okay. Okay. And then, so I guess you have to do that for streaming or for listening to the classes. We don't do the stick anymore out here, do we? You could bring. But we don't do that. But we simply don't do it, right?
Yeah.
Okay. Okay. So, did they pick a date for Nutshell yet?
Yeah, it's next. I think it starts the same rotation next Tuesday.
Right? Oh, it starts this coming Tuesday? Probably a break in between, maybe.
Yeah.
2 Tuesdays, so there'll be Buddhism in a Nutshell. Did they pick a date for Discovering Buddhism yet? Just in October, okay. Yeah, I want to plug that again. I always plug it because it's such a good opportunity to start a 2-year course because it's going to start in October and then you can catch the whole thing instead of like jumping into emptiness. Hey, I'm going to take this class on emptiness. So that's that. And what are the other classes? And then after you graduate from Discovering Buddhism, you can take Lam Rim on Wednesday nights with Geshe-la, which is just wonderful. And then after you have been, and well, not because that's ongoing, then the next level is a basic program, and that's a 5-year course. So that's on Friday nights. It's on date night. So you can come on from 7, and we have discussions, so it's a little longer. They were talking about maybe switching those two, but they haven't done that yet. I think those are the main courses. No, I think you could probably, I'm not sure how they're going to handle that. Do you know, like, if they're going to have to let new people probably come and join it? Because it's taught by chapters, like, I don't know. He's looking at me like, maybe, maybe not.
I tried to find out about them. I couldn't either.
Okay.
It doesn't make any sense.
Use a microphone, Chris.
Really?
I've wanted to say that for years.
Thank you. Yeah, doctor, heal thyself. But it doesn't make any sense to just let people into the... Right now they're on tenants. Mm-hmm. And I'm not sure what the second one is, but to not let people into that second one. But
could be definitions or something.
Yeah.
Since we are doing it by, what's a good way to say that, chunk of a topic that exists exclusive of each other, sort of. I mean, it's all connected. It seems like we'd be able to kind of jump into the next session. This one's almost over. But you have to, it's a very serious class. You have to promise to be committed to it, go to every one. It's not streamed. It's very serious. I don't mean like serious, but I mean like it's a commitment kind of class that you'd want to definitely be a part of the whole thing. And it's pretty amazing to be in a class with Geshe-la. It's amazing to have someone of that amount of knowledge in our presence. If you think about what it takes, I don't know if, Kim? She's, okay. If you think about what it takes to become a Geshe, you may not have a clue, but it's really from when they started, it's 35 years of schooling. And there isn't one degree that we have in all of America that could touch the amount of time and effort that they put into their degree. They're so learned, you know, it's really quite amazing. And then he went on to get a further degree in Tantra, I think. And so he is just, and he's the high, like, cum laude, whatever they call it in that. But he was the top of his class, too. And we have him here in North Carolina. It's so rare. It's very rare. It's such a golden opportunity.
Yes, I agree. To have an English-speaking Geshe is extremely rare.
It's so, I mean, like, there's probably this many.
But I wanted to bring it back, because that is very advanced. The Buddhism in the nutshell, anybody can come. You don't have, it's okay if you didn't register.
Yeah, you don't have to register for it.
Oh, okay.
Right, you don't have to register for this, right? No. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, wide open.
Because I'm a long-time member, but I think that would be really great to have a refresher, you know,
yeah.
Synopsis again.
Yeah, to get the overview. Mm-hmm.
Really, yeah.
I don't know that they do. There used to be one called Altars, Prayers, and Prostrations, and Venerable Tendrin used to teach just those basic things, that, like mala, you know, how to use a mala. What does this mean? Why do we do that? Why do we do this? So we don't have that right now, but, you know, you can also request anything you want. This tradition is very much based on requesting. So if there's things that you feel like you'd like, you have the right, and it's a beautiful way to request ideas that you might have, and talk to us. You can talk to Sarah about them or email Sarah. It's a good idea. Request, it's hard to say that for me. Request, request, request. Okay, who else has a comment or question? All right, we'll wrap it up. So let's do a big motivation that everything that we've done in these last 5 weeks, or if you just started tonight, that it's all been beneficial. That it's, just think of all the positive energy you have and putting the effort into wanting to learn something that you may know nothing about, or you may just be refreshing yourself. Since it is called Meditation 101, you have the intention to want to meditate, to make your mind better, to have more positive energy, to give to people in a better way, to be a happier person, more loving in your family, in your friendships, your relationships, to love all those people that we feel indifferent towards, to raise our compassion over and over again until we're enlightened. Because then and only then are we actually able to help people in a way that's most effective. Remembering the goal, remembering the plot. We want our minds to be as clear as they can be so that we can be as helpful. So take all that energy you've put into this, all for the benefit of others, for everyone's enlightenment, for your own and all beings, in all the 3 times 10 directions. And now take a moment for your own dedication. Thank you, guys. I really appreciate you being with me this whole time. I've totally enjoyed it. Go team.